In a time when countless communities are resisting powerful corporations, from Flint, Michigan to the Standing Rock Reservation, the new book, The Water Defenders, presents the story of a community that took on an international mining corporation at seemingly insurmountable odds and won not one but two historic victories. In the early 2000s, many people in El Salvador were at first excited by the prospect of jobs, progress, and prosperity that the Pacific Rim Mining Corporation promised. However, many people, including brothers Marcelo and Miguel Rivera and others, soon discovered that the river system supplying water to the majority of Salvadorans was in danger of catastrophic contamination as a result. Based on over a decade of research and their role as international allies of El Salvador's water defenders, Robin Broad and John Cavanaugh tell this little-known story in their new book, The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. In our discussion, we talk first with John Cavanaugh about who these water defenders are.
The people who we spent this 10-year journey with, most of them are farmers. Northern El Salvador is corn and bean country. Therefore, they depend heavily on the rivers around them. And they came into this fight because in the early 2000s, gold mining, gold prices started to rise. Gold is in all sorts of things, including your phone. It's a great conductor of electricity. China, demand was growing in China, elsewhere around the world. Gold prices go up. The mining companies come in. And they say to people like Marcelo and Miguel, we're going to bring you great jobs. So initially, these people were open to it. But then they began to hear stories. And they went across the border into Honduras. They saw that large industrial mining uses cyanide, which poisons rivers, kills fish, brings on all sorts of other health problems. And at that point, they awakened and began to organize to stop these mining companies. So most are farmers, or some are community organizers. As Robin said, Marcelo was a cultural worker. These are ordinary folks who stood up against, it turns out, a very large, powerful mining company.
At what point, Robin, did they realize that there was trouble, that they were in danger of really catastrophic contamination?
That's a great question, because we tend to think that ordinary people on the ground, or we can, people in richer countries tend to think that ordinary people on the ground can't make these connections. And they actually started to realize early on, as John said, at first they were very excited about the prospect of jobs. That shouldn't surprise any of your listeners. Northern El Salvador is a very poor country, is a very poor part of the country. There are not a lot of jobs. Anything that promises jobs sounds very intriguing. But it was also because they were farmers, because most of them lived so close to the land, they began to think about something that they have thought about for a long time already, which is both the health of their water and the health of their land. And they began to ask questions. As John said, those questions led them to Honduras, just across the Lempa River, so just across the river that ended up being the focus of this fight for water. And there they saw the large-scale mining. They also, because El Salvador had mining in the past, they were able to go to the site of a shutdown mine in El Salvador where they saw, we went there, it's shocking to see, it's red and orange water that flows from this old mine site. And that is, the color is the result of something called acid rock drainage or acid mine drainage, where when you open up the rock to mine, when the companies opened up the rock to mine, they also exposed it to rain, which turned the sulfides in the rock to acid, to sulfuric acid. And so every time it rains, iron and arsenic and other toxic chemicals are literally leached into the water. And that is, that's actually the scariest place we visited in El Salvador. So all this led Marcelo Miguel and their best friend and colleague Vidalina Morales to begin to put the pieces together and say, wait a second, we want jobs, we want progress, but at what price are we willing to accept progress?
One of the hardest things to understand, I think, in reading this story is just how the deal came to be. So you picked this up in 2009. The government of El Salvador is faced with this ultimatum. So you either allow Pacific Rim, this Canadian mining company, to mine for gold and risk polluting the country's water supply, or you pay them over $300 million in costs and foregone profits from future mining. So the thing that I just can't get over is how they are able to make such an ultimatum.
Yeah, you know, in the 1980s, or think back to Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, big companies had friends in governments in richer countries, and they reset a lot of the rules of the global economy. This is one of the most egregious, though. This tribunal in the World Bank, where corporations can sue governments over profits foregone. So here, Pacific Rim had put a little bit of money into El Salvador. It had found gold. It thought it deserved the right to mine. The government, hearing from these activists, started to step back and say, we need to pause and study this. And just based on that, these global economic rules do allow corporations to sue governments. Governments, by the way, cannot sue corporations. Communities can't sue corporations. You can't bring into this court issues like we need to protect our water and the environment. So it's a very biased set of rules. And part of the fight, therefore, evolved from just a fight over whether or not El Salvador should mine or save its rivers to a bigger fight over how can these rules exist and can this case be defeated? And so it's fascinating. So you got a whole battle on the ground there, which the water defenders in northern El Salvador are bringing to the national level. And now we've got a global component where activists in Canada, the U.S., Australia came in because a big Australian-Canadian company took over Pacific Rim. We're out there on the streets and doing research on the firm and on this tribunal. And all of a sudden, from northern El Salvador, you have a global fight.
We are talking to Robin Broad and John Kavanaugh, authors of the new book, The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. Robin, you made 8-9 trips to El Salvador and spent significant time with these people, the Water Defenders. Tell me about those meetings and how ultimately they end up trusting you and understanding what you are interested in, and then also how you hear the other side of the story.
So we got into this in 2009 at the request again of Miguel, of the brother of Marcelo Rivera, who had been murdered. So he came to us. We know how these global corporations work and how these global rules work. And the people in northern El Salvador, in San Isidro Cabañas, which is where this mine was going to be built, were of course shocked to discover that the decisions about their life, about their community, were going to be made in a secretive court in Washington, D.C. So as John and I started researching, and we knew a lot about the World Bank, we didn't know as much as we knew after 10 years, but as we started researching and as we started getting more outraged, we began going to El Salvador every year. And we realized as we met with these people, I guess the other thing I should say is that John and I have lived and worked in the Philippines. So we are village people. We really like spending time with people in remote areas of countries like the Philippines or El Salvador, and we find it a privilege to get to know them. But But this began as more of a business, a collaborative effort to try and keep mining out of El Salvador. And we went and we shared what we learned about the tribunal, and they shared what they were doing on the ground in El Salvador. And after the first trip or two, we all realized that they had a coalition in El Salvador called La Mesa, a coalition of groups who worked on this for El Salvador. And we realized what we needed to do was set up something similar on the global level, a coalition of groups who wanted to either work on trying to beat the mining company or trying to figure out how to possibly win in this arbitration court. And so we and others set up something called International Allies of La Mesa. And I think part of why this worked is because we were very clear about who should do what. So we didn't go into El Salvador saying, we're Northerners, we know better.
Right.
We said, you know El Salvador better. You are in charge of what happens domestically. And we will help you internationally. And so it just grew to be a relationship of trust where we each respected each other's side and we shared information. I should also say that we weren't bringing money with us. We were bringing information and knowledge and a shared goal to save this country from mining. And I think that's part of why it worked as well as it did.
So, and you asked, Joe, how we got the other side of the story. That's a fascinating thing. Robin and I reached out to the mining company. We wanted to speak to the CEO, to their officers. They refused to talk to us. But we got incredible information about them from two sources. One, this court case, the Salvadoran lawyer who we befriended, Luis Parada, helped get us access to the court documents. So we saw emails, we saw testimony, we got into the heads of these miners through the court case. And then, as is often the case, one of the miners in El Salvador confidentially gave materials, including a lot of internal memos, to a researcher who worked with Robin. And through that, we got much, much more. And I just want to say quickly, most people, I think of these big companies, ExxonMobil, Walmart, so on, as huge, unbeatable financial behemoths. What comes through in all these memos is they made a lot of mistakes. They did not understand the local culture. They were arrogant. And part of the reason in the end they lost is because of that arrogance.
So let us talk about the winning part, and that is the 2017 mining ban. So what ultimately does that make sure happens?
This is, as you know from reading the book, Joe, we build up to two very unlikely victories. One is in the World Bank Group, and you're not asking about that, so I won't talk about that more. That happened in 2016. That was the first surprise. And then in 2017, in March 2017, just about 4 years ago, the Salvadoran Legislative Assembly voted unanimously to ban all metals mining in El Salvador. This made El Salvador the first country in the world to ban all metals mining. It is a law. Like any law, a future Congress in El Salvador could overturn it. But it is a law that, as I said, was passed unanimously. And part of why it was passed unanimously, and this is something that can't be stressed enough, is that there is this very, very strong social movement in El Salvador, beginning with the water defenders in, like Marcelo, Miguel, and Vidalina in northern El Salvador. That grew to a very strong national movement. It brought in unlikely allies, archbishops, people from the conservative political parties in El Salvador. So that would be as if Democrats successfully reached across the aisle to Republicans and got all the Republicans in the U.S. Congress to support them.
Mm-hmm.
So It is something that has widespread support among people in El Salvador, and therefore is something that, up till now, politicians have not even raised the possibility of challenging. However, because these are really smart local activists who, as John said, are just ordinary farmers, and we use that word purposely in our subtitle, they are already preparing for a day when a Congress might in fact change the law. And so in addition to having this national law, they are doing community municipal referendum across the country to have municipalities, small cities and towns, pass something called a Territory Free of Mining Act. So that's like communities in the U.S. who are passing laws against fracking. So they're trying to, they're building up local communities who are saying there won't be mining here, no matter what happens on a national level.
So, John, let us end here of where you think, I guess, what your thoughts are on the future and your optimism for where we are right now, given what Robin just said.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think what part of this story and part of the win is the universal appeal of protecting water, making access to water, clean and affordable water, a basic human right. We tell the story of a successful battle in one of the poorest countries in the world, in El Salvador, but this fight is playing out all over the world, all over the United States. In the U.S., people are fighting, the Apache are fighting against a giant copper mine on their sacred grounds in Arizona. People are up in northern Minnesota right now, hundreds of people trying to block a pipeline that would destroy their water sources in indigenous lands in northern Minnesota. So all around the world, people are fighting for this basic right. And all around the world, unfortunately, people are being challenged by climate is making water more scarce, fresh water. So that is a problem. And big, powerful corporations either are trying to mine or extract things from the ground that threaten water, or they're trying to privatize municipal water systems. But I think the biggest takeaway from this is the appeal of clean and affordable water is universal. The fight in El Salvador was largely not a fight against mining. It was a fight where the water defenders put water up front. They said, "Water is life," was their slogan. We can live without gold, but we can't live without water. And the fact that they could unite even conservative people in that country, conservative archbishops, I think gives us a feeling of hope that we can learn from that, and we can do that in this country, and we can make, right now there are millions of Americans who do not have access to clean and affordable water. The Poor People's Campaign, led by Reverend Barber, is making a huge priority in this fight, and it's winning converts on different sides of the aisle. So the fight over water will be one of the big battles of the 21st century, and El Salvador gives us lots of lessons for how we can win it.
The name of the new book is The Water Defenders: How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. The book is published by Beacon Press. Robin Broad, John Kavanaugh, I thank you both very much for being with us and telling us this remarkable story. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Be well.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Water Defenders. It is published by Beacon Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.